often do you find that people around you will, on occasion, do some incredibly stupid things that make their lives more difficult than they need to be? I see this all the time. My favorite example is from a story I saw in the news not that long ago. It was about a man who was flying in Europe on Ryanair Airlines. Now, at the time, Ryanair was offering a scratch-off lottery ticket promotion. So this guy gets on the plane, takes off, he buys some lottery tickets, scratches them off, and discovers that he's won the equivalent of about $13,000. This is a happy moment, and he's excited. He calls a flight attendant over and says, "Look, I've won." She looks at the ticket and says, "Congratulations, sir, you won $13,000. He then looks at her and says, "Great, can I have my money now?" This man decided that he wanted to get paid his winnings right there mid-flight. The flight attendant looks at him and says, "I'm sorry, sir, I can't pay you right now for two reasons. Number one, this promotion with the lottery tickets is run by another company. When we land, take the ticket to them, they'll pay you then. The second reason is that this is an airplane." Now, this bit of obvious logic eludes the man. So he continues to argue, demanding to be paid. And the flight attendant can do nothing but say, "I'm sorry, we can't pay you." He gets so mad and so worked up that to demonstrate just how angry he is, he takes the lottery ticket and eats it. Let me repeat that for those who may have missed it. He ate a $13,000 winning lottery ticket. It's stories like this that make me fear for the future of humanity. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Well, did he still try to redeem it the next day? Don't think too hard about that one. Now, here's a story of a man who in one moment made a really bad decision that ended up costing him $13,000. Now, I look around the room, and I've had the pleasure of chatting with a few of you already. I think it's safe to say that no one here would eat a winning lottery ticket. However, we all have those moments where, because we're angry, stressed, afraid, or just not thinking, that we make a bad decision, take a bad action that makes our lives more complicated and difficult than it needs to be. Which is interesting when you think about it, because our lives are nothing but a series of moments. If we make good decisions in those moments, life gets easier and more successful. If we make bad decisions, life gets harder and more complicated. So that's what I do now, is I go and I speak to organizations and conferences, showing groups how they can make better decisions in those moments. I have a unique approach, as it said in my introduction. I'm probably the world's only motivational improviser, which means I'm kind of like a motivational speaker, but I use improv comedy ideas to make my points. Now, you may be wondering, how does that possibly work? Well, I'm going to let you know right now by demonstrating improv comedy for you. It's an exercise I'm going to play solo from the stage. I am going to need a volunteer to help me with something very simple. Now, rest easy. I know what happens. The speaker says the word volunteer, and immediately everyone gets very interested in their shoes. Like, don't make eye contact. Don't worry, I don't do forced volunteerism, so I'm never going to look at you and say, "You be my volunteer." In fact, right now I'm going to explain what I'm going to have you do. I'm going to begin telling you all a story that I make up here right now. If you're my volunteer, I'm going to hand you this bell. Anytime you want, when I start telling my story, you can ring the bell. When you do, I have to stop, go back, repeat what I said, but change it to something different. It can be anything at all as long as it's different. So if my story were to begin, once upon a time, there was a girl with a pet dog. Once upon a time, there was a girl with a pet cat, with a pet mouse, with a pet gecko, whatever. As long as you ring, I change. When you stop ringing, I continue telling the story, but only as if that last thing was said. So in this example, the dog, the cat, and the mouse would be gone. We'd be left with a story about a girl and her pet gecko. That's all there is to it. You don't have to improvise. You don't even have to speak. So could I get a volunteer who'd like to torture me just a little bit? Okay, right up front here, come on up. And what is your name?
Danielle.
Danielle, let's give Danielle a big hand. Thank you for helping me out, Danielle. And let's come to the center of the stage here. So I'm going to go ahead and hand that to you. You know, sometimes you think, what if the volunteer's not that eager? So Danielle, I might be making the mistaken assumption that you've never done this before. But just to let you know, there's no right or wrong way to do it. However, there's a rhythm and a frequency that might make it more or less entertaining. So if I want you to go ring more frequently, I'll give you the let's go faster signal. If I want you to ring less frequently, I'll give you the let's get off the caffeine signal. Okay? I have a feeling I know which one I'll need to use with you. I will say, if you're uncertain, though, err on the side of ringing more frequently, because that makes it more entertaining for the group. And feel free to ring multiple times on the same line, like I did in my example.
Excellent.
Okay, are you ready?
Totally.
Oh, boy, here we go. Once upon a time, there was a man who loved to go outdoors and just be in nature. And he loved to go into caves, because he just liked to be secluded by himself. So one day he went into his favorite cave, where he discovered something interesting. He discovered something so boring. It was a set of encyclopedias. And he's like, why are encyclopedias in my cave? These were not here before. When suddenly from behind the cave came this man who said, well, came a woman, a beautiful woman, who said, well, I brought these encyclopedias because I heard you like knowledge. I heard that you like women with books. And the man looked at her and said, wait, how did you find my internet search history? The man looked at her and said, yes, that is true. I have been looking for a woman who loves books to be my wife. And the woman looked at him and said, well, I might be interested in being your wife, but only if you agree to do one thing. Only if you do 10 things, because I'm a woman, I'm very demanding. And so the man looked at her. So the man looked at her and said, I would do anything for you, except I kind of have a fear of snakes. I have a fear of women, which is going to make this relationship hard. It's going to make the relationship really cool, because women like challenges, and I would be the biggest challenge you've ever had. And the woman looked at him and said, well, I'll tell you what, you can stay on that side. Here's the W from the inside. Here's this set of encyclopedias. I'm just going to hit you in the head with them, because I am going to take them and read myself, because I am just going to take them and build a house out of them, because really no one reads encyclopedias anymore anyways. All right, that's the end of it. Thank you. Let's give Danielle a big hand. Thank you very much. Awesome. Thank you. Whew, okay. So that's an example of improv comedy. And right now some of you are thinking, what on earth is that possibly going to have to do to help me with my job, my role as an association executive or an associate member? Well, if you're thinking that, I invite you to think about one thing, that life isn't scripted. No matter how much we want it to be, with our plans, our agendas, our day planners, our goals, our visualizations, our dream boards, life is the ultimate improvisation. And just when you think you've got it all figured out, the universe comes along, throws you a curveball, and says, ding, now deal with this. That's why the title of this presentation is that sometimes ding happens. And ultimately what I found, it's not necessarily how well you plan, though planning is important, but rather how quickly and effectively you react to those dings of life that ultimately determine your success. Planning is important, but improvising is essential. And the world is changing so fast. And I've been involved in associations as well. I know your world is changing very, very fast, right? We all see technology changing. It's like every week, every month, you have to learn a new system, a new association management, new content management, new email, new blog. You have to repurpose your content you have to make it consumable in different formats, right? You got your website. Well, now we need to put it in PDF. Now we need an app. Now we need a podcast. Now we need a blog. Constantly being forced to keep up with technology. On the flip side, technology can be your association's biggest competitor. I mean, everything Jim said was true. This is why we love associations. We come to get our questions answered. We come for great content and speakers, and we come for networking. And yet now, with technology, you're facing members or potential members who think to themselves, well, in 5 minutes, I can answer my question on Google. I can hop on a YouTube or TED and listen to the best speakers in the world. And I can join a Facebook group or a LinkedIn group and get all the networking community I need. If we keep maintaining business as usual, we're going to be in trouble fast. What's interesting with your role is you have an interesting perspective on change, because you're often the constant, with boards that change, members that change. So you might find yourself in one of two positions. Either you get a new board or membership that wants everything to change. You need to rein them in to remind them of legacy. Or maybe it's the reverse. You've got a board that's so resistant to change, you're trying to drag them into the 21st century. What's interesting, though, is with all this focus on change, the one thing that cannot change and start to feel stagnant is ourselves. We're so busy trying to keep up, we don't have time to step back. Our own personal development, our professional growth, tend to lose a little mojo when we don't have that opportunity. And that's one of the reasons I believe you're here at the whole conference, is to tap back into that. So whatever challenge you're facing, I'm hoping to talk about that today. We're really going to talk about three levels of change. Number one, to improvise. When ding happens, how do you react quickly in a way that keeps you on track instead of getting derailed? Number two, the next level is adaptability. Every ding moment has an opportunity within it, Great improvisers learn how to find and leverage that opportunity. And the third level is innovation, just like the theme of your conference. You don't have to sit around and wait for ding to happen to you. You can use your creativity to create your own ding moments that change the game and propel things forward. Along the way, we're going to play some improv games. We're going to have some volunteers come up, so start thinking about that. And I may have you guys do some exercises just sitting at your tables. Before we move on, I want to mention two things. Number one, I put these little yellow cards out on the tables. On one side, it says help. On that side, on that card, I'm going to ask you to write down a sentence, anything at all, sentence or phrase. It could be a line of dialogue. It could be a quote. It could be just a sentence you like. Speaking of ding moments, your marketing team did such a great job that I actually didn't bring enough cards for everybody. So if there's, I wrongly anticipated people not sitting on the outsides. I should have left the cards blank in the front, obviously. So you may need to grab a card from another table if you don't have one. But if you could fill that out towards the end, I'm going to collect it for an improv game that I'm going to play. The second quick note, since you guys are talking about Twitter, my Twitter handle is AvishP, A-V-I-S-H-P. If you're one of those Twitter people, feel free to throw my handle in there. Okay, let's get rolling then. So the first level of change, of dealing with change, is improvisation. When ding happens, how do you react quickly in a way that keeps you on track instead of getting derailed? At this level, it's all about adopting the improviser's mindset. To adopt the improviser's mindset. From working with improvisers for 20 years and working with organizations and companies for 10, I have found the fastest way to create improvement is not to learn a new system, skill, or technique, but rather to first change the underlying mindset. And that mindset I can sum up with three Fs. Three words, all that start with the letter F. Fun, failure, and focus. In a more expanded form, to have fun, to be willing to fail, and to focus on what you can control. These are three core mentalities I found lead to great improvisation on stage and off. The first two, fun and failure, go hand in hand. Having fun, improv is inherently a fun thing. It's called improv comedy. But I've seen some people so nervous about it, they forget to have fun, they're not entertaining to watch. And failure, improv is wrought with the possibility of failure. We don't know what the audience is going to say. We don't know what suggestions we're going to get. I don't know when she's going to ring the bell. I don't even know what's going to come out of my mouth next. So there's failure. But if you get too afraid, you cut off your creative resources. I could talk for a long time about fun and failure and mentality, but I think it'll be better to demonstrate this with an improv exercise. For this, I'm going to need volunteers again. This time, I'm going to need two volunteers to help me so you won't be up here alone. So can I get two people to come up here and help me with an improv game? You can't volunteer other people. Yes, you can come up, and you can come up. Come on up. And what is your name? What is, Rachel. Let's give Rachel a big hand. Yep, and what was your name? Tori? Dory. Let's give Dory a big hand as well. Okay, Rachel, since you made it up to the stage first, why don't you step forward and Dory just kind of hang back for a second. Now that I've brought you two up and you're kind of committed, I'll let you know this is the hardest improv game I have volunteers to play. So let me explain what's going to happen. Let me hand that to you.
Thank you.
Rachel, you and I are going to begin by having a conversation. However, there's going to be one letter of the alphabet that we are not allowed to use in any word we say. It cannot.
Can you make it a Z?
Well, we'll see about that in a moment. We'll get the letter in just a minute. It can't be at the middle, can't be the beginning, in the middle, or at the end. If one of us, pardon me, uses a word that has that letter, I'll ring the bell. Whoever used that word will jump out. Dory will come in and take her place, or my place, his or her, will take their place, and the conversation will continue. The next time someone makes a mistake, we ring the bell again. That person jumps out. Whoever was out comes in. So we just keep switching places based on making mistakes. Now, here's the thing. I've done this game for a long time, so I know how people like to cheat. So if you use a word that has that letter, we ring the bell. If you talk real slow, we'll ring the bell. So just keep going, keep flowing. If you talk real short sentences, like three words at a time, we'll ring the bell. So make sure you're telling full sentences. If your grammar starts to make you sound like a caveman, we'll ring the bell. And if you try to slip in a foreign language word to get around using the letter, we'll ring the bell. Other than that, very easy. All right?
Okay.
Now, before, I'm going to get a suggestion from the audience for a location where two people might be having a conversation. Before I do that, let me remind both of you and everyone in the audience the reason why I brought you up here. It's not to make you look bad or to put you in a tough spot. It is simply to practice the idea of fun and failure. So as you approach this game, I know you're in front of a bunch of people and you're a little nervous. It's a difficult game. All I want you to remember is have fun. You know, just enjoy the process even if you make a mistake. And be willing to fail. So don't be so afraid of saying the letter that you freeze up. So have fun, be willing to fail, and everyone will enjoy it. Just keep reminding yourself
that.
Except you guys. Well, if you enjoy it, they'll enjoy it. So let's get, just call out a location where two people might be having a conversation. Beach, bathroom. Let's do Starbucks. Let's do a coffee shop. All very good. So we'll be at a coffee shop. And let's say we are not allowed to use the letter S in any word we say. So coffee shop without the letter S. Are you ready?
Yes.
We didn't start yet.
This game is dumb.
Sure, okay, we can start now. Okay. Now we begin. Hello, what can I get for you today?
I'll have a latte.
Ooh, how big a latte would you like?
Venti. Oh, with cream and just cream.
Just. How about a food item to go with your coffee?
Bagel?
Could you tell me more about that bagel?
Let me think. Bagel toasted.
Toasted. Okay, a bagel and coffee. You know, I have an idea. I need help. My people quit. So. All right, Rachel. So now it's you. So you switch the mic back and forth. So you two are still having a conversation at Starbucks.
Is she you?
Sure. Give her.
You're in need. You're in need of help.
I was saying share the mic. So.
Hiring now. Well, let me think. I know a few people. I can do it.
I'd like a coffee.
All right, let's ring the bell. I'm not exactly sure what happened. Let's give them a giant hand. Thank you. Thank you, Dory. Thank you. That's the first time that's happened. They just started playing a different improv game. That was awesome. No, that was great. So that is an incredibly difficult game. I think they played it really, really well. Let's give them another giant round of applause. Now, obviously it's a tough game. You can see just watching it. But would you agree that they played it to a level that was fun for us to watch? It was entertaining as a game, yes? And here's the thing, they had no improv training. All I did is remind them, just have fun, be willing to make those mistakes. And with that attitude, that kind of playful attitude, the creativity flowed, and they succeeded at a level. Sometimes I work with improv groups, I've worked with performers that have a lot of experience. I introduce them to this game and they struggle, because though they've got the skill and the experience, they never learn that right mindset to approach a game like this with that playful, fun attitude. So when ding happens, it's incredibly powerful to remind ourselves to have fun and to be willing to fail. Now think about it. The reason this is hard is because when ding happens, fun and willingness to fail are the first two things that go out the window. Ding moments aren't fun. They're usually painful. And ding moments bring failure very much in the forefront, so we get very frozen up. And failure is not about taking stupid risk or saying, oh, I don't care if I mess up. It's just realizing that the fear of failure doesn't do anything for you but cut off your creativity. Now, it's when we add in the third F that it gets really powerful. The full improviser's mindset happens, which is focus on what you can control. In improv, as in life, there are so many things outside of our control. Great improvisers learn to focus on the one thing you can control, which is your response to those ding moments. To demonstrate that, I'm going to use another improv exercise. However, rather than getting a volunteer and having me play it, I'm going to have you play a game. Just sitting at your table, I'm going to have you do a very simple improv exercise. It's going to be easier than this game, I promise you. So the first thing I need you to do is turn to someone sitting at your table, just partner up. And if you have an odd number, you can do this with a group of three, but no more than three. So make a little group there, two or three people. Say hello, introduce yourself. All right, here's what you're going to do. You You and your partner are going to tell a story. You're going to tell a story, each of you contributing two words at a time. So, the first person can start with once upon, then a time. There was a dog who liked whatever. And you just keep flowing. That's all there is to it. A couple quick rules slash tips. Number one, I want you to go as fast as you can. Almost so if someone was watching, it would sound, or if they weren't looking, if they were just listening, it would seem almost as if it was just one person telling the story. So go fast. Don't overthink it. Number two, you're going to try to stick to two words. But like if your partner says one word or lets three or four words come out, don't make them wrong. Just keep flowing. Remember, it's about being okay with those mistakes and keeping going. Finally, no one is watching you. So don't worry about being perfect. If you're telling your story and it goes totally off the rails, where you're like, I have no idea what's going on, it happens. Throw it away and start a new one. You don't have to struggle with a story that doesn't work. And as a reminder, just like this game, you're not doing this to be creative. You're not doing this to be funny. You're doing this to practice the three Fs. Have fun. It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're playing improv comedy. Enjoy it. Be willing to fail. As I said, no one's watching you. If you make a mistake, it's okay. Throw that fear of failure out. And number three, focus on what you can control. You have no idea what your partner is going to say. All you can focus on is throwing your two words out as quickly as possible. All right, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds. Just play this game. Either one of you start and go. Okay, good. Give yourselves a hand for playing along. All right, now. All right, first of all, let me just say, congratulations, you just performed improv comedy. So well done. Now, I say that not trivially, because one of the most common comments I would get when I was doing improv comedy performances, people would say, oh, I could never do that. And frankly, depending on how weird they looked and how in-depth of a conversation I really wanted, I might just say thank you. But the real answer is yes, you can. Sometimes all you need, just like here, is the right mindset and a little bit of practice. And when you think about it, how many areas in our lives do the same thing apply to? We cut ourselves off from opportunity because we say, I'm not good at that. That's not for me. And yet maybe all we really need to do is adopt a different mindset and get a little bit of practice. Now, I like this game because to me, this is how life works. You say your two words, and you have a hope and an expectation for how your partner or how the world is going to react. And so often what comes back is completely different than you expected. Great improvisers, the one who play this game well, is no matter what happens, they just have fun, say, hey, I don't know where this is going, it might fail, but let's keep moving forward. And they focus on their two words and they respond. People who struggle forget those three Fs. So to apply this as you leave here, through the rest of the sessions, back at work, when ding happens, step back and remind yourself, have fun, be willing to fail, and just focus on what you can control. And an interesting side note, in your role as the constant in your association, I find this is an indicator of potential trouble. If the people in your association on the board are not having fun, if they don't have an attitude of being willing to fail, and if they're not focusing on what they can control, there may be a ding down the road, so it's a nice early indicator as well. So that's the first level, improvise, which is great. The problem is, if you're just improvising, just reacting, you can start to feel like your life is nothing but putting out fires. It's like you're jumping from ding to ding to ding. You're just reacting. To break out of that cycle, the next level is adapt. Every ding moment has a great opportunity within it. Great improvisers learn how to find and leverage that opportunity. This is a two-step process. The first step is to think better, not back. To think better, not back. What I mean by that is that when ding happens, our natural, visceral human response is to just want things to go back the way they were before the change. Even if that place wasn't so great, and even if that place cuts us off from better opportunities. I want to share a bit of a personal, embarrassing personal story that demonstrates this. A few years ago, I was in a relationship with a girl, and we were... that I met in a cave. We're in a relationship, we're really happy together, we liked each other, we loved each other. But we had some long-term incompatibility issues that were going to make it really impossible for us to actually get married, start a family, which is something we both wanted. So we tried for a while, to make it work. But at the end of the day, we made the very mature decision to go our separate ways so we could find someone more compatible. And that was good. It was an amicable breakup, and I was fine with it. Until a few weeks went by, and I started to miss her. And that little voice started in the back of my head. And if you know that voice, you know this is a bad mental headspace to be in. Because you start doing things you really shouldn't be doing. Like writing and sending emails you shouldn't send. Making phone calls at hours of the night you should not make phone calls. Putting together and sending mixtapes. Yes, I tried the power of the mixtape. Now, let me a little bit of advice. If you ever find yourself in this position, tempted to put together a mixtape, don't do it. It doesn't work. There has never been a breakup in the history of relationships where two people have gotten back together because one person put together an awesome mixtape for the other. Like, Phil Collins, Our Love Is Against All Odds. Like, no. Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you. I've never gotten sympathy at that before. Thank you very much. A little side note, don't do it. And my situation was no different. We did not get back together as a result of my gitchy mixtape. I still don't know what that means. I hope I didn't offend anyone. But here's what's interesting. We didn't get back together, and what happened is then it was great because a couple years later, I met someone far more compatible, far better for me, and we started dating, we got married, and now we have our first child on the way, so things worked out for the best. So. And she's actually in the back, so if you want to go harass her later, you can. But here's the thing. Things worked out great. In that moment, I didn't care. All I knew was things were uncomfortable, and they had changed, and I didn't like it, and I just wanted things to go back the way they were before. Even though all those long-term compatibility issues were still there. And this is what happens to us when a change occurs. That instinct is, I wish we could just go back to the way we were before. Right? That's why great improvisers don't say, how do I get back? They say, how can we get to a place that's even better than before this change happened? Or if you see the change coming, ask yourself not, how can we maintain the status quo through this change, but rather, how can we take advantage of this change? Too often, in businesses, in associations, in organizations, the thought process is, well, how do we just keep things going through the change? You don't have to look any farther than a company like Kodak to see what happens when you try to maintain business as usual in the face of change. So maintain and keep going. Now, what's interesting is in your role, as I said, as the constant, it can be a little bit harder because you may have been there for 3 years, 5 years, 20 years. Having that legacy and having new people come in wanting to change everything, sometimes your first instinct may be to go back. So something just to be a little bit aware of. Now, of course, just thinking of how do I get better, not back, accomplishes nothing if you don't take action. So the second step is to take action, and in improv terms, it's not just action, it's bold action. You have the choice of being tentative or bold. In improv, we like to be bold. I'd like to demonstrate this with an improv game. I am gonna need a volunteer to help me with something to come up. Now, I know you don't trust me anymore after that last game. So let me explain what I'm gonna have my volunteer do. I have this book. It is a book of two-person scenes, plays. If you're my volunteer, I'm going to hand you this book and a microphone. You can then open the book to any page you want. You're then going to read one of the parts from the script. I don't have my own copy of the script, nor do I have this entire book memorized. So I'm just going to have to improvise along, doing my best to make the play make sense, even though I don't know what the script is. So that's all there is to it. You don't have to improvise. I just need someone to come up and read. So anyone who's ever been an actor or wants to be, oh my goodness, that hand and body went up very quickly. So come on up. And I'm sorry, what was your name? What was your name? Adrian. Let's give Adrian a hand. Oh, Adrian, yes, we've emailed before. Well done. All right, first of all, I'm going to hand you that. And that as well. So, Adrian, first off, go ahead and open to any play you want. And I'll give you a couple little notes here. Number one is I haven't vetted the entire book. So if you're reading through the play and you come across a word you don't want to say for whatever reason, just go ahead and skip it or change it. No one's going to know but you. If the entire context of the play is making you uncomfortable, like the topic's really weird, just go ahead and switch to a new play. You're the only one who'll know. If you're reading one part and you accidentally switch to another character, like you start reading the wrong part, again, you're the only one's going to know, so just keep going. And if the play ends and we're still going, just start reading a part from the next play, because who knows. Also, sometimes there's these big monologues. You don't have to read the entire script, just a couple lines is fine. Okay, now before we start, I'm going to up the complexity just a little bit. So for me, not for you, don't worry. Before we even know what this play is about, let's set a scenario here. So call out an activity, something you do not every day, semi-frequently. Horseback riding, all right. Oh boy, so this scene is gonna somehow involve horseback riding, and let's just say I have some internal goal or ulterior motive in this scene. What should my goal as a character be? Can be anything at all. Not to fall off. All right, well, that's fair. Okay, so horseback riding, I don't want to fall off. You have your play, are you ready? Adrian, I am so glad you brought me out to go horseback riding, but I got to tell you, I am really afraid this horse is going to throw me off.
Can I just read a line? Mm-hmm. Look, Beth, don't you think you ought to put your shirt back on?
I thought our goal here was to commune with nature. I'm very free. If you're self-conscious, that's your issue. But I say bring it on, world.
I don't. Really, I don't. It's stopped bleeding. It hasn't bled for a long time now.
Well, that's good. I appreciate the medical update. I assume you're talking about the wound you suffered when you fell off your horse, which is why I'm so terrified about falling off this one.
It just aches a little. It's not bleeding anymore.
Okay, good. So really, you should have no fear then. So why don't you hop on with me, and you can kind of hold me and make sure I don't fall off.
Look, please, just leave it alone and put your shirt back on.
All right, fine. I will put my shirt back on, but then you have to help me with this horse because I don't know what I'm doing and I might fall.
Well, then your mother or brother could come. Somebody could come in here.
My mother and brother live in Philadelphia. If I fall, it's going to take them days. Wait a minute, you brought me out here to sabotage me. You've always been jealous of my success.
Just stand up. Stand up on your feet and put your shirt back on. Please, man.
Well, I'll stand up in the stirrups, I guess. I have put one shirt on. Is it too sheer? Is this your problem?
How do you figure that?
I figured because I put my shirt back on, and you're telling me to put my shirt back on. Clearly, you find my form so unflattering, you need me to double cover.
What makes you so sure about that?
You just said it.
I thought you couldn't,
All right, let's give Adrian a hand.
So now we're going to do something for me.
Yes.
So this is for Rachel.
All right.
Bam!
This is just a day of firsts. I got people playing their improv games. This is my first onstage selfie. This is awesome. You guys are the bomb. All right, so fun improv game. Now, here's the deal. The reason I played that game is to demonstrate that there's two ways of playing that, tentative or bold. A tentative improviser, when they play this game, when they're not the one with the script, their tendency is to be very vague. So they'll let the person with the script speak first so that they can kind of get an idea what the play is about. They'll say vague statements that will be right no matter what, like, I don't know, why don't you tell me? Sure, sounds good. So they're playing it very safe. What that does is it makes no matter what they say, they're correct, but it makes the game far less entertaining. So it's easy but less entertaining. Safer but less successful. The bold method, which is what I try to do every time I play it, is where you do things like, I don't know if you noticed, but I spoke before the person with the script had a chance to say anything. I didn't know. 90% of the time what I say doesn't match at all. That's what makes it entertaining. Then throughout, I kept trying to throw out bold steps, like, let's do this. I don't know why, and got to put my shirt back on, whatever it is. That makes the game a lot harder, but it makes it a lot more entertaining. In the same way, when ding happens, or when you're trying to institute a new innovation or change, you have the option of being tentative or bold. Tentative is going to feel real good. It's safe, it's easy, and it feels like you're doing something, but it doesn't accomplish much. Here's the problem. When you take tentative action, if it works, you get tentative results, which are hard to build off of and not very motivating. You take tentative action and it doesn't work, you don't get much valuable feedback. Bold action, on the other hand, if you take bold action and it works, you make big progress, which is awesome. When you take bold action and you fail, you get strong feedback, which allows you to adjust and adapt and change. Now, when I say bold action, I'm not talking about taking unnecessary stupid risk or betting the farm. A bold action could be as simple as, hey, let's do one pilot program. Let's test a small product launch. Let's try a new meeting format in one meeting or in one breakout session, see how it goes, see what the response is, instead of changing everything all at once. Here's a note. A member survey is not a bold action. It's valuable, it's useful information, but it's not action, it's still analysis. And here's the thing, in my experience with surveys, is how people say they'll respond in a survey is often different than they actually do respond during implementation. So take a bold action, see what happens. You make much faster progress by taking an action, analyzing the results, and making an adjustment, and then acting again, one small step at a time, which incidentally is exactly what you already did when you played the two-word story game. You said your two words, you had a hope for what would come back. When it was different, you analyzed it, made an adjustment, said your next two words. Next two words came back, analyze, adjust, take the next, creating a whole new story you never would have otherwise. So use that mindset to take it to the next level, to find opportunity in ding moments. Think better, not back, and then take bold action. So those are the first two levels, improvise and adapt. Things get really fun when we move to the third level, which is innovate, which is planting the seeds of innovation. You don't have to sit around and wait for the unexpected to happen to you. You can create your own ding moment that changes the game and propels you forward. This is what innovative companies do all the time. The most obvious example is Apple, right? Apple computers. They have created ding moments on at least three separate occasions in the last 15 years. First, when they introduced the iTunes and the iPod, right? Forced everyone in the mobile music space to change. Then a few years later, they created the iPhone, forced everyone in the cell phone space to change and follow. Then they did it again with the iPad, forcing everyone in the tablet and computer space to change. They didn't just build a better product, they changed the game with a ding moment. Now, you may say that, well, that's great, but I'm not CEO of a giant technology company. Maybe not. But we all have those times in our lives where we feel stuck in a rut, like we've got a plateau we're stuck on, like we've got some goal we're trying to achieve and we're struggling. In those cases, I'm suggesting that maybe instead of doing what's traditional, which is trying harder, working longer, throwing more money at the problem, maybe in those moments, it's about stepping back, creating your own ding moment that changes the game and gets you moving forward again. What we're talking about here with innovation is doing something new or doing something old in a new way, which is essentially creativity, which is a giant topic. I don't have time to talk about the whole thing here today. I'm going to talk about one point. However, if I could turn your attention back to those little yellow cards that are on the table. In about 10 minutes, I'm going to collect them. So if you haven't written a sentence on the back of that, I would appreciate if you would do so. I'm going to use that for an exercise I play. On the other side is a sign-up form. If you want, I'm happy to send you an MP3 I did on creativity. You can fill that form out. I'll email it to you. It goes much more in-depth on this topic. That's optional, whatever you want. The other side, I'm going to collect those, so I'd love it if you haven't done a sentence yet. Okay, so creativity is a giant topic. I'm going to share one topic, one powerful idea. to help you innovate, and frankly, tie in, it's the first step, in my opinion, to planting that seed and building it. And that is to say yes and instead of yes but. Every moment, ding or otherwise, you have the choice of saying yes but or yes and. Great improvisers choose to say yes and. Rather than explain that further, I'm going to demonstrate this with another improv game. This is going to be the final time I ask for a volunteer to come up on stage. So I know those of you have been waiting for that right moment. This is it. So can I get a volunteer to help me with my final improv exercise? This will be easier than the scenes without the letter game, I promise you. So I get one more volunteer. Come on now, don't be afraid. All right, there we go. Come on up. And what was your name? Lauren. Let's give Lauren a hand. All right, Lauren, I'm going to give you that microphone.
Thanks.
All right, come on, front and center. All right, Lauren, here's what we're going to do. Let's say that we are, we're going to have a conversation. However, the one of us will make a suggestion. After that, every sentence will have to start with two words, yes, but. So you'll make a suggestion, I'll say yes, but, and fill in my sentence, and you'll say yes, but, fill in your sentence, and we'll go back and forth.
Okay.
We'll just do that for a little bit, like 30 seconds, and then we'll stop and replay that with the same first line, but switching the yes, but to yes, and to see how that changes the conversation.
Okay.
So let's get a topic of conversation. Let's say we're planning a meeting, and we're going to talk about what location, either venue or city or whatever, we should hold it in.
Okay.
So you make a suggestion, and after that, everything will start with yes, but.
Okay. I think it would be a wonderful idea to have your meeting at the Wyndham Grand Jupiter.
Yes, but I'm a Hilton member, and I get points if we have our meeting at the Hilton.
Yes, but the Wyndham has excellent points as well, and maybe you should try something new.
Yes, but I feel like the Wyndham's a little out of the way for people, and you know, I'd like to bring them, make it more central.
Yes, but I don't agree with you.
All right, very nice. Good job, good job. We can see how quickly that devolved. Now, let's replay that conversation. You make the same suggestion about the Wyndham,
okay.
Only this time everything's going to start with yes and instead of yes but.
Okay, same suggestion?
Yep, same suggestion okay. About having it at the Wyndham.
I think that you should have your next meeting at the Wyndham Grand Jupiter.
Yes, and since I believe we have an inside connection, you could probably get us a great deal to have our meeting there, right?
Yes, and it's new and exciting, and you would love it.
Yes, and since it's new, our members actually haven't been there before, so it's going to be exciting for them, too, kind of make it feel like we're doing something different.
Yes, and I feel like we're totally vibing right now.
Yes, and so why don't you call them and set up the meeting?
Yes, and we should celebrate with cocktails after.
Woohoo! All right! That's all there is to it. Thank you very much, Lauren. Great job. Are you with the Wyndham? Oh, I see. Wow, that yes but could have gotten ugly really fast then. Real simple exercise, you probably see from observing the difference in yes but and yes and. However, this game, more than any other, has a real visceral feel that goes along with it. So what I'm going to have you do is play the game that Lauren and I just did, just like you did with the two-word story. So turn back to your partners. You can do this with three. If you've got three, just kind of go around the circle there. Or partners is good as well. So partner back up. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to do the same thing Lauren and I did. However, I'm going to give you a different topic of conversation so you don't just repeat what we did. Let's say you have a mutual friend and you're planning a surprise birthday party for him or her. One person start with a suggestion. You can talk about anything, where to have it, who to invite, what kind of food, what kind of gifts. One person make a suggestion. After that, everything starts with yes, but, back and forth or around the three. I'll let you go for about 30 seconds, and then I'll have you stop and replay it like Lauren and I did with the same first suggestion, but switching the but for and seeing how that works. Okay, so whenever you're ready, one person make a suggestion, and then everything after that starts with yes, but. Okay, good. Good. Now, Now what you're going to do, just like Lauren and I did, you're going to replay it. Whoever started, start with the same basic first suggestion. This time, have everything start with yes and instead of yes but, and see where that leads. And go. Okay, good. Give yourselves a hand for playing along. All right. So, how was that to play? Good? How did yes but feel? Negative? Like you're fighting? Like you're arguing? How about yes and? Good? Positive? Collaborative? I'm also willing to guess you got a lot farther in your party planning with yes and than yes but. Of course, right? Yes but is negative, yes and is positive. Yes but is confrontational, yes and is collaborative. Yes but stops progress, yes and keeps things moving forward. Yes and is a powerful, open-minded, creative, innovation leading to mindset that keeps conversations moving and lets you explore ideas. Now, I need to pause for a minute because I need to talk to my realist friends in the room. Because right now, some of you are sitting there thinking, well, that's great in an improv game, but you can't always just say yes. Sometimes you disagree. And you're right. This is not a literal technique. It's a mentality. So I'm not suggesting that if, like, the office slacker comes to you and says, hey, I haven't worked on this project for 3 weeks. Can you do it for me? That you say, yes, and let me pick up your dry cleaning. And as 2 years of marriage has taught me, if your wife comes to you and says, does this outfit make me look fat? Yes, and old. Like, no, right? You don't. So it's not a literal technique. You don't just say yes and everything, but it's a mentality. And we're talking about ding responses, ding moments, and default responses. And for so many of us, when ding happens, when an unexpected event occurs, when someone comes to us with a suggestion or an idea that is outside of what we want, our first reaction is yes, but. All I'm suggesting we do is we change that default response to yes, and. Here's what happens when you do that. Number one, you maintain and build rapport. Because you know from being yes, butted how much it annoys you. If you think about the worst customer service experiences in your life, there was someone saying yes, but behind it. When you say yes, and, you maintain rapport. What yes, and lets you do is explore the idea as well, which is where the seeds of innovation start. It's not just, yeah, but that's a bad idea, or yeah, but we tried that 3 years ago, it didn't work. It's, yes, and, why do you think that's a good idea? Yes, and, how do you think that would work? Yes, and, what's a way we could implement that? Then you tie it to your old challenges. That exploration is the start of creativity. Now, you can see from playing this, outside the scope, but from a teamwork, leadership-type mentality, imagine how effective you could be if the people on your staff, your board, your committee, and your membership treated each other with a little more yes and, how much more you can get done, how much more rapport there'd be. From a dealing with change standpoint, from innovating standpoint, yes and is critical because of that little thing known as our comfort zone. We all have a comfort zone. When we say yes, but what we're saying is, yes, I'm going to step up to the edge of my comfort zone, but I'm going to stay right here. When we say yes and, what we say is, yes, I'm going to step up to the edge and I'm going to take a little step out, that bold step. And then you're out of your comfort zone. Now, here's what's interesting. Innovation, as I defined it, as doing something new or doing something old in a new way, almost by default has to happen outside of your comfort zone. Because if it was in your comfort zone, you'd already be doing it. So yes, but is the enemy of innovation. If we want to plant the seeds of innovation, we need to change that default mindset to a little bit more yes and. Now, you can't just say yes and to ideas that are sort of good. The real creative power comes when you say yes and to ideas that are stupid, impossible, crazy, too expensive, potentially illegal. Not from an implementation standpoint, but to dig deeper and see how can we use that. That's where some of the best technological advances and organizational advances come from. Start with a horrible idea, work to a much better one. But if you say yes, but, you never get to that better idea. Now, this makes sense in the conference room, but it's hard because yes, but is so natural. It's so seductive. And I know this because I almost yes, butted myself out of any success in my speaking business. I've been doing this for 10 years now. But when I started about as dumb as you can. I had no experience. I had no clients, no prospects, no leads, no money really saved up, and no real clue about what it took to build a speaking business. But I said, let's say yes and go. And I struggled, as you would probably guess from that, in the beginning for quite a while. Until I came across an organization most of you are probably familiar with called the National Speakers Association. And I started going to meetings of that. And it was awesome. Great education, wonderful organization, and I liked everyone I met. Except for one person. You know how there's that one person? You don't even have to talk to them. You can walk into the room, see them just from the way they're standing on the other side of the room, you think to yourself, I'm not gonna like you. Well, I picked out my target right away. It's a short, redheaded woman, and just from the way she stood, I was like, I'm gonna stay away. But of course, the universe, ding, throwing curveballs, one day I had to ask her a question. So I walk up to her and I very politely say, excuse me, Kristen. Now this was a problem because her name was not Kristen. It was Kirsten. I know, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, come on, I was close. It's not like I walked up to you and said, excuse me, cookie. But this look of death I got from her. Now, you would think I'd have more sympathy. I don't have the most common name in the world, right? It's pronounced Avish. But I get all sorts of variations. I get Avish, Avish, Ashvin. One time someone called me VJ. It's like, you're not even trying. But you think I'd have more sympathy. I'm like, whatever, I don't care. Kirsten, Kristen, Cookie, Kafka, whatever, I don't care. Just reinforced in my mind that I wanted nothing to do with her. But then I was invited to join chapter leadership, which meant going on a two-day planning retreat. And I go there. Guess who comes walking in the door on the morning of day one? Little Miss Cookie. I'm like, come on, I don't want to spend 2 seconds with this person. I got to spend 2 full days. Well, an interesting thing happened on the morning of day one. She dropped a piece of business advice. And I thought to myself, that could really help my business. And as I said, in this period, my business really needed help. The problem was I needed more information, which means I had to talk to her. Immediately, the yes buts began in my head. Right? Yeah, but you don't like her. Yeah, but what if she helps you and then you owe her? Yes, but what if she bites me? Which seems like an odd sort of fear to have, but keep in mind, to me at this moment, she reminded me of like one of those little yappy dogs, you know, little body, big voice, lots of attitude. Well, I realized, however, that I was saying a lot of yes buts. So I thought to myself, Avish, can you walk your talk? Which is something we should all ask ourselves to do from time to time. Okay. Yes, and this could help your business. Yes, and when it helps your business, you're not going to care what the source of the advice was. Yes, and if she bites you, you can make your money by suing her. So I walk up to her and I very politely say, excuse me, Kirsten, because I got it right. And I ask my question. And her response was polite, friendly, and helpful. So I ask a follow-up question. Again, polite, friendly, and helpful. This leads to us having a conversation. This leads to us talking all retreat long. So much so that at the end of the retreat, we exchange cards and say, hey, we have some things in common. Let's meet up and then continue the conversation. So about a week later, we meet for lunch. And lunch is normally like, what, an hour, 90 minutes? We end up sitting at this coffee shop for 5 hours, just talking and getting to know each other. Now, before you get ahead of me, I know where some of you think this is going. Like, ooh, this is very romantic. I hate to burst your bubble. Nothing romantic happened. We didn't start dating. We didn't get married. We don't have a whole litter of little yappy dogs running around our feet now. But she did become a very, very good friend of mine. More relevant to you as a professional audience, the first year I started to see success in the speaking business, I could trace 50 to 75% of my business somehow back to her. Whether it was just a piece of business advice she gave me that I implemented, a referral she passed on who went on to hire me, we even did a 6-month consulting contract together, the two of us working with a company on their communication and creativity. and all that. I honestly don't know if I would still be in business today if it wasn't for Kirsten helping me out in those earlier years. And I think back and I'm amazed. It's all because in one moment, I was able to stop saying yes, but, and say yes, and. Now, I got incredibly lucky because the universe kept giving me opportunities to connect with Kirsten. I kept saying yes, but I kept getting another opportunity. For so many situations, though, we only get one bite at the apple. An opportunity comes along. If you say yes, but to it, it's gone. Either it disappears forever or someone else takes advantage of it. So let me ask you, what are you saying yes, but to? Who are you saying yes, but to? What's your Kirsten? What opportunities are you letting pass you by because you're committed to staying in that comfort zone and saying yes, but? And how different might things be if just in a couple of moments we could change that default response from yes, but to yes, and to move yourselves forward? So those are three levels of improvisation. I'm going to finish up here in just a few minutes. At this time, I would like to collect those cards. So I got a couple of volunteers who are going to help me grab them. So if you could pass them to one person at your table and maybe hold it up, that would be incredibly helpful. If you have any questions for me, I'm going to be hanging around, but I'm leaving this afternoon, so try to grab me in this next break if you have a question or want to talk at all about any of the content we had here. As they're doing that, I forgot to make one quick announcement after Lauren came up. If you volunteered for one of my games, I have a gift. I have a book for you. Come see me in the back. My bag of books is back there. I announce this at the end because I want volunteers to come up because they want to do improv with me and not because they want a free book. So be sure to come up and see me for that. Oh, I'll come grab these from you. I'll grab the ones in the front. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Ooh, I'm going to go this way and I fall. Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right, while the last, oh, thank you very much. While the last few come in, oh my goodness, that's a giant stack. All right, thank you. I know, it's a great turnout. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, to summarize, no matter how well you plan, ding happens. And it's ultimately how quickly and effective you deal with those ding moments that can determine your stress level, how successful you are, and how smoothly things go for you. So remember, when ding happens, number one, adopt the improviser's mindset. Have fun, be willing to fail, focus on what you can't control, and let go of the rest. If you want to take it to the next level, think adaptability. Ask yourself, how do I get better, not how do I get back? And then take a bold step and see what happens. Finally, to unleash innovation, to plant that seed of innovation, start thinking and saying yes and. Catch yourself when that yes but moment arises. And ask yourself, how can I approach this with a yes and mentality? And see how that suddenly changes the response you get and the progress you make. Simple technique, incredibly powerful. I'm now going to finish up. This is the point in a presentation where a speaker traditionally tells an inspirational story about a time that I climbed Mount Everest while blind with a one-legged dog strapped to my back. I don't have that story. But I figure, as the world's only motivational improviser, I should improvise an inspirational story for you. I'm going to make it up on the spot. I don't need a volunteer for this exercise because these cards will be my volunteer. Yeah, now you're like, uh-oh, what did I write? I'm going to begin telling you a little mini motivational speech with an inspirational story. Periodically, I'm going to stop, pull out a card, and read whatever you wrote on it, unless it's blank. I'm going to read out loud whatever you wrote, and then I'm going to incorporate that into my story and keep adjusting as we go. As I finish this, I hope you'll be entertained by it, but also in the back of your head, see if you can see the improviser's mindset, the step-by-step bold action moving forward, and the yes-and mentality applied to how I play this game, and see if you can apply it to yourself. And before I start this story, every speaker has kind of like their motivational system, their process, their step-by-step techniques. So from this side of the room, can I get a verb, some kind of action other than sleep, walk, or run?
Party.
Party, ooh, yes. FSAE, yes. Party. And from this side of the room, can I get a descriptive word like an adjective or adverb? What was that back there? Hard. Wow. I'm sad I'm missing this Cuban Libre party tonight. All right. Hard is a little on the nose. How about someone said animal over here, right? I don't know if animal's a verb or, I mean, it's not really an adjective, but sorry, I like how you roll. So I'm gonna give you a brief motivational speech on the power of animal partying. All right, here we go. Let me mix these up a little bit. All right. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining me. I am here to share with you the power of animal partying. Most people don't know this, but if you are stupid, you are stupid. You cannot fix stupid. So what I'm about to share with you is not a magic bullet. For you dumb people in the room, find a smart person and have them help you along. But for you smart people, animal partying may be the thing for you. You see, I learned about animal partying when I was a young lad. My mother one day pulled me aside and she said to me, "Be a rainbow in someone else's cloud." Now I thought, you know what, Mom, that's great, but that sounds a little airy-fairy to me. I'm a hip young dude. I just need to go out and have fun. My mom was very upset by my reaction, so she threw me out, which was really sad. In fact, that made me think to myself, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you will get. I did not know that I was going to get thrown out of my house at the age of 16. So what I said is, you know what? I'm going to go to this party, and I'm just going to party so hard I'll crash there and no one will even notice. Well, the guy who owned the house looked at me when I woke up in his floor the next morning, and he said, "Be tenacious." And I realized, here's a guy, I just passed out in his house, he's telling me be tenacious. I needed to party even harder. So I started a process of partying like crazy. Until one day, it's never what you say, it's how you say it. I realized I was really not saying the right things or saying it in the right way at all. So I went to this massive party, completely convinced to change my life, and I ended up climbing the fence into this animal shelter. In this animal shelter, there was a sign, and the sign said, "The camera adds 10 pounds. Well, how many cameras are on you?" And I looked down, and I thought to myself, my God, all this partying has made me so fat. But I love partying. And then I looked around at these animals, and they were having so much fun, but they were lean. And that's when the thought came to me. You don't know what you don't know until you know what you don't know. And as that thought kept going over my head, I said, man, I gotta stop doing drugs. And so I stopped partying, I stopped doing drugs, and I started hanging out with the animals. And I realized that's the real party. It's not about alcohol and drugs. It's about blank cards. It's about, I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. You bet your sweet pappy. It's about re-tapping into that childlike wonder we had, partying like animals who don't need drugs, licking each other, having fun, wrestling and tumbling. So think about that. Don't go for the fun. If you want to be a success, you need to party like an animal. Live life to the fullest and make sure you do the right thing. And as you leave here, if I could leave you one final thought, the thought that encompasses animal partying to the degree that will help you at this conference, it's this: I'll be back. Thank you very much. Enjoy your conference.